enterprise.
Absolutely. It is.
Like 57 years old, 67 years old.
Yeah. And those are some policies of ethnic cleansing that really resemble the Nakba of 48.
Amit Orfali is an Israeli conscientious objector. He's also involved in the Protective Presence movement, protecting Palestinian shepherds and villagers from racist attack by Jewish settler terrorists and their Israeli soldier buddies. Amit belongs to a group called Herd of Justice. Check out its posts on Instagram and Twitter. We'll link to Herd for Justice and to the Protective Presence USA podcast at greenplanetmonitor.net. You are listening to the Green Planet Monitor. I'm Dave Kattenberg. If you appreciate what you're hearing, subscribe to the Green Planet Monitor at greenplanetmonitor.net. Today, seemingly uninhabitable after 1,000 days of joint U.S.-Israeli genocide, young women and men are writing poetry. Coastal Lines Press is a collective of 38 writers. Their goal, to turn words into life-saving supplies for their families. In the last couple of GPM editions, we've spoken with two Coastal Lines poets, Lara Al-Kharazin and Noor Abu Mariam. Here's Noorhan Shaheen. Hello, Noorhan Shaheen. Welcome to the Green Planet Monitor. Introduce yourself, Noorhan. Tell me who you are and where you are.
So, I am Noorhan. I'm 22 years old, a cybersecurity engineering student, a writer, a chess player. And now I used to live in Khan Yunis. It's an area at the northwest. At the northeast of Gaza, but now I am displaced in a city whose roads I once knew by heart. I've been displaced 7 times, you know, can you imagine? The first time I was being displaced to a school, you know, it was, you know, school. We used to know school as place where children can study, but now it's welcoming refugees. So now I am at Al Mawasi. It's a place, an area in Khan Yunis, which the Israel occupation, you know, make it as the safe zone. Actually, most Gazans now from the east and from Rafah are now in this area specifically. I'm living in a tent, in a camp full of tents, surrounded by people I had never seen in my whole life before, and with almost nothing. So, yeah, that's about me.
Are you communicating with me now from a tent?
Yes, I am. Actually, I've been living in a tent for 3 years now.
You've been living in a tent since the start of the genocide?
Yes, actually, to be specific, the first time that I've lived in a tent was in February 2024, which is like the last time that I get displaced. Before that, I get displaced 7 times.
And who are you sharing that tent with?
Actually, I'm living with my family of 6, 2 boys, 2 girls, my father, my mother, and me. Yeah, the oldest one.
And have you lost any members of your family?
No, thanks God. I've never lost any members of my family, thanks God.
But I imagine that you've lost friends of yours have been killed.
Yeah, actually, colleagues from the university. I've been so shocked when I heard that they get murdered. And the most sad thing is that I've never knew this since, yani, after they get murdered with like 2 or 3 months. Because, like, you know, at the beginning of the genocide, there was no internet. There is no connection. The borders were closed. Everything was difficult.
Now, so you're living in this tent. There's 5 of you in total in the tent?
Six.
And what's your food situation? What's the food and water situation?
Actually, food, yani, thanks God, in my case, me and my family can provide our daily needs. But actually, yani, things get better. after the last ceasefire. But before the ceasefire, at the middle of the genocide, you know, having food was a daily struggle for us. Like, I can remember days like the markets were completely empty. Like, we once, like, bought 1 kilo of flour with, like, $30 or $40. It was, like, something you can't even imagine. And I remember sometimes my mother, like, make bread from pasta. She cooked pasta and made flour out of it because there was nothing on the market. The genocide was reaching its highest level. But yani, these days, thanks God, you know, we can manage our yani, our stuffs, our daily needs of food. But some families, food is a daily worry for them. They depend on aid distribution and whatever they can cook on fire.
And drinking water?
Water is one of the hardest part, actually. We got water from a nearby distribution point. Actually, today, after calling you, actually, the water generator and the water tank just came near to the camp, and my father and my brother just went there to get some gallons of water. This tank only come like 2 days a week only, so sometimes we get out of water, and never to mention it's so hot, it's summer, we need like water so much, and actually the water is rarely clean. I've get sick multiple times because the water was not clean, actually.
And what's the sanitation situation like? Sewage and toilet facilities, what's that about?
Actually, there's no bathroom. I can remember that I've never went to a real bathroom since 3 years now. Me and my family, we created like a makeshift one. Yani, you can imagine, like, no privacy at all. Something as simple as washing or using the bathroom become a whole daily challenge, especially for women and girls in the camp. You know, it's like so hard to take your privacy.
And infectious disease, illness, we've been hearing about, skin infections and insects and rats. And I'm sure that the health situation amongst the people in Al-Mawasi and generally speaking in Gaza is terrible. What's the health status of people?
Yeah, I understand that. Like, when the summer started, its nightmare just started with it. Like insects, like rats everywhere. Like me and my tents, like every day, we just wrap it up just to search for any insects, for any rats. And actually, I've got some skin diseases because of the insects. Like sleeping at night has become a terrible thing because of the... Actually, I've never seen such this insect, never in my life. The conditions are really... really harsh because, you know, imagine like living in a sea on sands, like this sands, like we are putting our tents on, are not good for living, for human being. It's more like for harvest, for growing plants, not for people, like, you know, building their tents and living on it. So the conditions are, you know, so hard and unbearable.
Tell me about your zine, Nurhan. It's called I Failed to Water It.
Actually, before talking about zine, I will give you like an intro for it. Like, I started writing when I was writing in 2018. I was a kid, you know, fascinating with literature. I read a lot of books. So I started writing, and actually my rights was like in general, like reflects like things inside of me, something in general, not writing about a specific issue, about political things, none of that. But when the genocide started, the war started, actually the first days of it, I was completely shocked, like, what is going on? I have never imagined or experienced something like that, like seeing blood, dead body, like, losing my home, losing my room, my stuff, everything that ever connect me to my past. I was in a complete shock. Like, my family was sometimes worried about me. Like, I was completely silent, having my diary and just writing my feelings, writing the situation that I went through, you know, just it, being silent and just writing. And I kept them private. Actually, before that, I have never, you know, published any of my writes. And one day I just shared one of my writes with my close friends, and they encouraged me, you know, to publish any of them. I was not actually really into it, but once I have called one of my friends, he suggested to me Coastal Line Press. I connected to Leila, and then we start working on my zine. So my zine connect of some pieces of situation that I went through, feelings that I went through, some harsh realities, something that I saw and I cannot even handle it till now. And yeah, that's about my zine.
Would you like to read something from your zine? I'm looking at it right now.
Yes, I will read for you the first poem that I have wrote it. Just let me open it.
Is that called a message to the reader?
I can read it if you like, but I have like one favorite poem. Actually, I left it untitled because till now I couldn't find like a title to describe it. Is it the one with has like the tenth illustration?
Yeah, you read. You go ahead and read whatever you want. Yes, I see it.
War is a mother, a terrible mother, for she gives birth to death and fear. She brews sorrow and loss. She builds a tent and teaches her children the art of forfeiture. So when will the one before be ripped up?
Huh. Read another one.
So I can read for you, like, the vortex of war, like the second part, the gasp of death. It holds, like, a bad memory for me. So the gasp of death. Here we are in our third refuge, and death is still sweeping away the places behind us. Then suddenly, a soldier's voice, evacuate. To where? Even within the embrace of your homeland, you remain displaced. We line up on the body of that road, carrying a home, a country, a memory in our bags. The number on my ID deflects the bullets of his rifle. The print of my eye restrains the iron from my wrist. So how is a human being to be identified amidst such lines of humiliations? We drag our heavy steps across streets where we once greeted friends, where we planted olive trees and lilies. There I lean my frail body against the edge of what remained, a heap of memories with half a soul and half a heart, as my hand grew weary from carrying my homeland. Then a bullet pierces his head, and his memories spill around his body like blood, his final exhale after so many frantic breaths. I continue walking, counting my breaths, ignoring the mathematics of the universe, hiding from death, or perhaps from fear.
I'm speaking with Noorjahan Shaheen. She is a student and a writer in Gaza, currently living in Al-Mawazi in a tent camp in Gaza, in a tent she shares with her family, five others, six people in total in that tent. It's astonishing that you can actually communicate with me. There are 38 members of the zines from Gaza Collective, 38 of you. Do you know the other members?
Yeah, actually, we connect to each other. We have a daily Friday meetings. We connect, speak, make ideas, share our writings. Sometimes we go on a speech. Actually, we went to a speech in Berlin like a week ago, another in Vienna. So we are collaborating each other to tell the truth, to speak about Palestine, to speak about our beloved city, that people and the world can know the truth behind the lies and the fake footage that the media is broadcasting to the world.
You say that you and other members of the collective, you communicated with Berlin in Germany?
Yeah, actually, at Coastal Line Press, we went to a lot of events. We go make give speeches, sometimes contribute with people. Actually, I've made an event in Berlin. I've talked about, I give a talk called Reading Reading is Not Watching, Watching is Not Acting. And the last month, we go on Vienna, and my other friends, writer, just go on a lot of events.
So these are online events. You're obviously not traveling to Berlin or to Europe. You're communicating by remotely, correct?
Yeah, unfortunately, because you know the borders are closed, so we are making like a Zoom call with the audience there.
And what feedback did you get? The folks in Berlin, they're very supportive of you.
Yes, actually, when I give the speech of Berlin, my speech in Berlin, I get shocked about the amount of people who actually take a seat and actually listen. And yeah, before the event end, I heard like feedbacks like it was really moving, and people actually listen and actually get touched because sometimes the truth should travel the way it should always meant to travel, from a human to human, and from heart to heart, and from a human who actually lived the experience itself, not from the media, not from anywhere else. So, yeah, it's a good thing, actually.
Noorhan, you were telling me you studied in university. What university did you study at?
Actually, I'm studying at University College of Applied Sciences. But it's now dust and rubble. The Israeli occupation destroyed it. But now I'm completing my studies since the 7th of October online learning.
But you were studying. I didn't quite get that. The university. This is which Gaza university was this?
I'm studying cybersecurity engineering at University College of Applied Sciences in Gaza.
The University College of Gaza.
Of Applied Sciences, yeah.
Of Applied Sciences. And it's totally, the university is gone. It's been demolished?
Yes, at the first days of the first months of the genocide. It's now dust and rubble.
And what happened to your professors?
Actually, the headmaster of my university get murdered. Some of my professors get murdered as well. And some of my colleagues get murdered, like, yeah. But now, actually, we are continuing our studies online. Like, some professors who, you know, survive, we connect online. They made like a makeshift places here in Khan Yunis at the north and at the south. Sometimes we go there to discuss the lectures and the ongoing education process.
And I've seen images, pictures, footage of kids, children, inside tents receiving instruction, like, you know, elementary school and high school kids.
Yes, actually, I've once volunteered at Palestine Red Crescent Society as an English teacher. I've taught children aged from 6 to 12 English language, because there was no school, actually. All the school get destroyed. So I volunteered on this initiative called Shared School. I really enjoyed it. And the idea of giving hope and educate children that have lost so much, lost so many, it was like an unforgettable experience for me.
And I've seen images, pictures, footage of kids, children, inside tents receiving instruction, like, you know, elementary school and high school kids. I can't imagine the trauma that young people, children, are going through. I mean, you're a young adult, you're able to process these things, as difficult as it is. But for kids who are 7, 8, 9, 10, I can't imagine.
Yes, actually, it's so hard. And sometimes when I sit with children at the breaks and talk to them, sometimes I see them speaking about it with each other, you know, revising their memories. Oh, I used to go to this place. I used to have this in my home. I used to have this toy. I used to draw with my pen, with my book. Actually, in this time, having a pencil and having a book was a rare thing. Like, if you could find it, you're lucky, because there was nothing, like, even the basic things. And actually, the seats that the children was sitting on was stones, was rocks, until yani they spent like 2 months from the initiative, like standing on rocks and writing on makeshift paper. You know, can you imagine, like, a children who have like a full life and in the blink of an eye go to completely difficult circumstances?
Now, Israeli occupation forces are continuing, of course, to attack Gaza. I was just hearing today that there was actually an attack on a tent in Al-Mawasi, and several people were killed. Tell me about this. Do you see drones, Israeli drones, every day, and are attacks happening on the encampment while you're there?
Actually, there is a sound of a drones right now, every day, 24 hours a day, but I'm afraid that you can't hear them. Actually, among the whole day, you can hear the voices of drones. Sometimes, like, they are so heavy that we can't sleep at night. And sometimes we get really terrified, because when we hear these drones, we know that they are going to bomb some place, and, you know, we can't even imagine who's gonna be killed next. And actually, from the ceasefire, it's a fake ceasefire. There's a lot of bombs happen. There's a lot of people who get killed in a blink of an eye. Sometimes, yani, once it happened to me, once I was walking on the street, and after crossing a certain area, they bombed this place. So it's like you cannot even process, you cannot even think, you cannot even do anything, because you don't even know if the next second or the next moment you are gonna be alive or you're gonna be killed.
Noorhan, what do you think of this Donald Trump's Board of Peace and efforts steered by Donald Trump and his Board of Peace to reach quote unquote peace in Gaza and to reconstruct? Do you have any hopes for this?
I don't know. Sometimes I think it's just a lie. Like, I can't see anything. Blood and death is becoming bigger every day. Actually, the Israeli occupation are taking more of our lands. You know, like, the place, the village that I used to live through, now I can't reach it. It's now just sand. No sense of homes, no sense of roads, completely nothing. And it's been now 6 months that they prevent us from going there. They call it like the red and the yellow zone. I don't know if you hear this on the media. So each day they are occupying more lands, more and more lands. And they're saying in the media, like, there's peace, we're going to fix the Palestinian issue, we're going to construct, it's a lie. We see nothing. The only thing that we see is death and losing our homes and losing our lands day by day and losing our identity.
But people are staying where they are. They can't leave. I mean, there's no place to go. And I know that Israel, the Netanyahu regime would love nothing more than for the 2.1 million people in Gaza to just leave. Perhaps, I don't know, 100,000 or so left behind. Israel would like to expel them entirely, to get rid of them. But there's nowhere to go. And I think the Gazans want to stay where they are.
Yeah, actually, I think it's a complicated status. I know that we see on media, like, the Israeli occupation trying to force Palestinians to leave their lands. But trust me, most of the people here refuse to do that. Because I don't know what is the connection between the Palestinians and their lands. Like, I can't even imagine, like, we were going to leave our land and just go forever. And for your information, if you leave this land, sometimes I hear some people, like, they're going to sign in some papers, so there's no way that they can return back to the land. And you're going to never know if you would be able to come back to your land again. And there's actually a lot of there is like a hidden thing that happened underneath the hood. People are paying like a thousand amount of money just to leave Palestine and to leave Gaza and specific to other places, but actually no one here can afford this bunch amount of money. And for their technique or for their plan to force the Palestinian to leave their lands, I think they're, you know, suggesting some areas like Indonesia, I guess, and Sudan and the South Africa, I guess. I don't know. It's something like whenever I think about it, I feel so sick. Like, what is going on? So I don't have actually a clear vision about that. I don't know. I hate to think about the future because they stole so much from me. They stole my best. I have nothing remained connect me with my best, completely nothing. So why to think about the future? Because every year and every day I get surprised about how the world become more cruel and more harsh to live in.
Noorhan, can you read another one of your poems? And I'm looking at Message to the Reader. This is a poem. It's an introductory poem, Message to the Reader. A homeland is not only a place, it is the smell of your mother's cooking.
Message to the Reader. A homeland is not only a place. It's the smell of your mother's cooking. Streets your feet learn by heart. One day, memory may be all that remains. These pages were not written in order. They were formed into fragments between concerns, memories, and moments when silence felt heavier than noise.
You dropped out there for a second. Read another one.
I read Fragment of Memory.
Yes.
Fragment of Memory. In one corner of memory, there was Gaza, a city that never fully materialized in my eyes. Time did not permit me to embrace all its neighborhoods, to walk every road, to linger in every alley. But there are places that hold peace of me. The fisherman's harbor, the corn vendor's tale, gathering places when the sea was a friend to everyone. Samir's bookstore and the university cafe. Places filled with the echo of laughter that had not yet learned the language of war. When the voice of Jerusalem wafted from Uncle's Khaled shop, Omziyat's balcony, scented with orange cakes, when the flower seller was selling joy, and every grave carries a story, every story bleeds inside of me, as if I have become identityless, without a land, without a memory, only a replaced soil in Gaza.
Noorhan Shaheen is a poet and zine publisher based in Gaza, one of 38 members of the Zines from Gaza collective. Coastal Lines is a creative writing and fundraising venture facilitated by a global network of illustrators and distributors. Like Vessels at Sea, Coastal Lines says at their website, Gaza zines travel from coast to coast, drawing lines of human connection and solidarity. We link to Coastal Lines and to Noorhan's zine at greenplanetmonitor.net. You can donate to Noorhan's zine right there. That's it for today's GPM, a joint production of Earth Chronicle Productions and 93.3 CFM UFM, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Thanks to our news editor, Kylie Wong. If you appreciate what you're hearing, help us out. Listen to, read, and watch more Earth stories and subscribe at greenplanetmonitor.net. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Blueberry, and on Canada's Harbinger Media Network. I'm Dave Kattenberg, over and out for now.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. Every listener matters, and we're here because of listeners like you. Thank you for all your support.